Burke, Renee Feldstein, Augusta Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Cami Warnoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Adriana Contreras, Maria Tarasane, our general manager is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Miriam Barnard, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, and David Prude. Stay safe by wearing a mask. You protect yourself. You protect your family. You protect the community. To see all the transcripts and the video and audio podcasts of Democracy Now!, the Quarantine Report, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
To listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio and the Jazz Society of Oregon are thrilled to bring you the 40th annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, July 17th, 18th, and 19th, as a live streaming event. Tune in and you'll hear the area's finest jazz, blues, R&B, and Latin musicians over the course of 3 days. The Bayou Boys, Bobby Torres, Saida Wright, and Tezetta Band are just a few of the 15 bands performing this year. That's the 40th annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, streaming live and on KBOO, Portland's longest-running community event, July 17th, 18th, and 19th. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage. I've been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong
time. I'd have said the right thing. And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Portland metro area will remain in Phase 1 for the foreseeable future. Fred Meyer isn't requiring shoppers to wear masks indoors, and in national news, the Supreme Court has made it more difficult for women to obtain access to birth control. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 8th, 2020. I'm Althea Billings. The linked counties of Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington are eligible on Friday to apply for Phase 2 reopening, but they won't be applying that soon. None of the counties are currently meeting all of the Phase 2 criteria, with increased case counts in some areas, some concerning trends on the rate of positive tests, and inadequate contact tracing of new cases back to a known source. The three metro area counties do meet the Phase 2 standards for low hospitalization rates and deaths, and plenty of available hospital beds, but that could quickly change. Leaders from all three counties have stated that reopening depends on the public's willingness to practice social distancing and wear face coverings to prevent a resurgence. Officials of Washington and Clackamas counties have complained to the state about being linked with Multnomah County for reopening. The Portland police held a press conference today to attempt to justify their use of violence against protesters over the past 5 weeks. Deputy Chief of Police Chris Davis stressed that the police would continue to use CS gas if they determined that it was necessary. That's despite a court order that is supposed to prevent police from using this gas and other so-called crowd control weapons. He said they would use these weapons during riots, which he defined as, quote, six people engaged in tumultuous activity. During the press conference, Davis showed videos of protests taken by participants from sites like Twitch and Facebook Live to illustrate the tactics of protesters. In one slide, the Portland police showed an infographic taken from the internet, though they, quote, didn't know where they had gotten it. The infographic showed the different roles that protesters in Hong Kong played in their pro-democracy protests against authoritarian Chinese rule. Another slide used in the police presentation was a list of what Davis described as police officers who had been doxxed by protesters. The list included convicted criminals associated with the right-wing Proud Boys hate group, Tusitala Tiny Tosi and Joey Gibson. The deputy chief stressed that the PPB had tried many different tactics to de-escalate crowd energy by putting up a fence and then later taking down the fence and retreating into the Justice Center, as well as by stationing cops in nearby parks. Davis said that the recent presence of federal law enforcement officers at protests, which was alarming to locals, was not in the control of Portland police. He also addressed a question by a KBU reporter about a June 14th video statement made by Public Information Officer Tina Jones, in which she stated that when dispersal orders are issued, they apply to everyone, including members of the media.
When a civil disturbance, unlawful assembly, or riot are declared, it's because criminal activity is occurring and that the area is not safe for anyone. These declarations are made verbally multiple times over the soundtracks. The same warnings are posted online on our Twitter account. We provide ample time to leave the area before dispersal begins. As a reminder, all uses of force are reviewed to determine if they are within policy and the law. We continue to work with our media partners about the importance of following the lawful orders given by the soundtrack, officers, and social media so they can stay safe and avoid arrest or altercation. The unlawful orders apply to everyone without exception.
In today's press conference, Deputy Chief Davis seemed surprised about KBU's question, saying that he didn't think Portland police would have made a statement that journalists would be arrested for doing their job of reporting on protests. But in addition to Lieutenant Jones's statement to the contrary, there are numerous videos from protests showing Portland police arresting members of the media as they display their press credentials and repeat over and over that they are journalists. Most of the recent complaints to Oregon officials about COVID-19 safety, that's around a dozen complaints a day, focus on grocery stores not enforcing the indoor mask requirement. The largest source of these complaints is from customers of the state's largest grocery chain, Fred Meyer. Employees there have told shoppers who complained about unmasked customers that their bosses have explicitly told them not to enforce the mask policy. Workers at various local grocery chains have complained about the lack of management support, citing their own constant exposure while management stays safe in their offices. Large grocery chains across the nation have declined to mandate masks, seeing customer rage at being required to mask as more of a safety risk than the coronavirus. Dan Clay, the president of United Food and Commercial Workers Local 555, told Willamette Week, quote, "Practically speaking, if somebody doesn't wear a mask, the response is to just ignore it. That's getting pretty old for essential employees who come face-to-face with this on a daily basis," end quote. Oregon OSHA is currently investigating these claims, though on June 24th, OSHA did ask Fred Meyer to provide the state with its plan for mask enforcement in 7 Oregon counties. Oregonians will be voting on whether or not to legalize psilocybin for therapeutic use this November. With more on the story, here's KBU's Nat Moon.
Oregon voters will get a chance to voice their opinion on legalizing psilocybin for therapeutic use in November. Over 130,000 registered voters in Oregon signed a petition for Initiative 34, which reduces criminal penalties for possessing, manufacturing, and delivering psilocybin. The initiative will also establish a program under the Oregon Health Authority for therapeutically administering psilocybin to individuals over the age of 21. Oregon voters will also have a chance to decide on another drug-related measure in November, decriminalizing drug possession while using marijuana tax revenue to fund substance abuse treatment services. Both initiatives reframe drug addiction as a health issue instead of a criminal offense. Oregon has one of the highest rates of mental illness among adults in the country, and an estimated 1 in 5 Oregonians is struggling with their mental health. Neuroscientist Addie Ray said of the initiative, quote, "The evidence is clear. Psilocybin therapy is an effective intervention for people suffering from depression and anxiety. IP34's framework prioritizes safety in a way that promotes access, treatment, and health." For KABU, I'm Nat Moon.
Many restaurants in the Portland area that have remained open during the pandemic have had to rely on third-party apps for delivery to their customers. These third-party apps like Grubhub, Uber Eats, and Caviar were charging local businesses up to 30% for each item ordered. And though that amount is an enormous burden for local businesses, many restaurants in the Portland area rely on those apps to stay in business. Today, Portland City Council passed an ordinance capping the fee that third-party apps can charge a business to 10%. Cities across the country have passed similar ordinances. In New York, Seattle, and Los Angeles, the cap is at 15%. The new ordinance takes effect immediately and will be enforced for 90 days after the state of emergency ends. A Cincinnati coalition is demanding Black Lives Matter arrests be dismissed, citing that more than 500 people arrested were specifically targeted to silence and suppress the message against police brutality. Mary Sherman has more on the story.
There are new demands that the city of Cincinnati drop the charges against hundreds of people arrested during racial injustice protests. On Tuesday, the Cincinnati Mass Defense Coalition served the city with motions to dismiss the cases against more than 500 people who were arrested, detained, and charged while protesting in support of Black Lives Matter. Coalition attorney Jacqueline Green contends police selectively targeted protesters based on the content of their message.
And the message, of course, was that they were standing up against racist policing and brutality. And the city's approach and decision to arrest these people was specifically targeted to silence and suppress that message.
If the city prosecutor's office continues to pursue the charges, it will then be up to the Hamilton County Municipal Court to determine whether to grant or deny the motion. Neither the city or the police department have commented on the motion. Most of the Cincinnati arrests are tied to violations of the curfew established by the mayor, which Green argues may not have been lawfully declared. And she notes there are similar stories of repression at protests in other Ohio communities and other states.
It's taken different forms in the different major cities and, of course, in some smaller towns as well. So we've seen a lot of violence, a lot of excessive force, a lot of aggressive policing tactics that are designed to scare people and to chill speech and disempower the movement for Black lives.
It's estimated that in just the 2 weeks after the May 25th police killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis, 10,000 people had been arrested in protests across the United States. For Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman. This story was produced in association with Media in the Public Interest and funded in part by the George Gunn Foundation.
The Supreme Court has upheld the Trump administration's broad exemptions to employers who raise religious or moral exemptions to providing free birth control coverage. The court ruled 7-2 that the Department of Health and Human Services had the authority to designate exemptions to the Affordable Care Act's contraceptive mandate. Justices Elena Kagan and Stephen Breyer joined the Supreme Court's conservative bloc in upholding the statutory authority to exempt certain employees from the mandate. However, the two did not join in the majority opinion. The case was sent back to the lower court with instructions to dissolve a nationwide injunction blocking implementation of the rules. The legal battle has pitted religious freedoms against access to contraception. The Affordable Care Act's contraceptive mandate requires employers to provide health insurance plans that cover birth control at no cost to employees. Previous cases have focused on objections to the mandate because of religious beliefs. However, in this case, the Supreme Court was deciding whether the Trump administration can extend exemptions to a wider range of employers with religious or moral objections to contraceptive coverage. With this Supreme Court ruling, the Trump administration's exemptions can remain intact. Because of this, between 70,000 and 126,000 women risk losing access to employer-provided contraceptive coverage. The Movement for Black Lives has announced a new proposal that will overhaul policing and invest in Black communities. With more on the story, it's Lily Bulkey with 2020 Talks.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 elections in uncharted territory.
For over four decades, the federal government has poured billions of dollars into police departments. Federal dollars have incentivized arrest, jail and prison construction, and the militarization of constantly growing police forces. And the truth is, all these resources spent have not made us safer.
Black Lives Matter, the group Patrice Cullors co-founded, is part of the Movement for Black Lives, a coalition of 150 racial justice member organizations. Yesterday, the movement announced a sweeping progressive legislative proposal called the BREATHE Act to overhaul the policing system and invest in Black communities. Cullors says core to their demands is reducing the power of policing as we know it in favor of new and innovative approaches to safety and accountability.
The BREATHE Act gets us closer to justice. Our movement has captured the imagination of millions of people. We are looking for bold leaders to join the people's call to action.
New Jersey voters went to the polls for presidential and state primaries, and Delaware had its presidential primary. Both relied heavily on vote by mail, with limited in-person options available. Hinal Patel directs the Democracy and Justice Program at the New Jersey Institute for Social Justice.
People have been used to voting in a certain way for years, decades, so changing that is always going to lead to confusion.
President Trump's relentless attacks on vote by mail worry some Republican operatives, who say GOP voters' distrust for absentee ballots could undercut their own candidates. Both New Jersey and Delaware had been piloting a mobile voting option, OmniBallot, through technology vendor Democracy Live. But neither used it yesterday. New Jersey tried it out last month in municipal elections. The only one voter opted in. Jill Itzkowitz chairs the Delaware League of Women Voters Election Committee.
Early on, if you voted, they were piloting these Omni software that for the voter was wonderful because you can go online and click the candidate, and it was great. But it got horrible reviews when it came to security and privacy. So they pulled the software, unfortunately.
Yesterday, the Democratic National Committee assailed Facebook for, quote, unkept promises to limit hyperpartisan content and curtail election disinformation in a memo obtained by the Washington Post. The internal memo was published just hours before Facebook top executives met with representatives from the Anti-Defamation League, the NAACP, Color of Change, and Free Press, leaders of a growing Facebook advertising boycott for the month of July. Afterwards, the advocates released a joint statement criticizing CEO Mark Zuckerberg for, quote, empty refrains of "we are trying." Political candidates are joining the hundreds of companies pulling their ads from Facebook, like Beth Dolio, who's running to fill a House seat in Washington's 10th district.
We're done with misinformation, with racism, with white supremacy, with anti-Semitism. We're done. Corporations are taking the lead. We can too.
From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an interview with a California death row inmate discussing the spread of COVID-19 in that prison. At 5:45, we'll hear news from the Boo. At 6, it's Right to Survive. Then at 7, tune in for Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear with a low of 64. Tomorrow's weather expects some clouds and a high of 71. Today in history, in 1948, social justice activist Ruby Sales was born. At the age of 17, Sales was part of the Selma to Montgomery marches. She founded the Spirit House Project, an organization that has documented the state-sanctioned murders of over 2,000 African American and Black individuals, 98% of whom were unarmed. The quote of the day is from Ruby Sales, who said, quote, "We will not be free until we've all been redeemed from unredemptive anger." KBOO News poet Dan Raphael's calendar isn't matching the weather.
Even summer is wary of coming out of isolation. We could go from cool, damp May to the hot drought of August just as quickly as we could go from measured patients to too many bodies for our hospitals to handle. As government aid dries up, as landlords and credit companies unleash their inner locusts, our choices may be to hunker in shade or go blazing into the streets, urban wildfires of the angry and depleted. Capitalism's a lot like COVID, opportunistic, deceptive, coming at us from so many angles. Over the centuries, capitalism has mutated from mom-and-pop stores to Walmart and Amazon to the faceless algorithms and acronyms of global extraction. If COVID mutates a fraction as much, most of our health will be bankrupt, work unprotected, and underpaid or die. I don't want to go viral or greedy. I smile at neighbors, talk with them about dogs, gardens, and music. I imagine myself a cute raccoon, wearing a mask and washing my hands, enjoying what life brings my way. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
A Montana court has blocked a ballot collection law that will further disenfranchise tribal members by restricting their ability to vote in the upcoming election. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Montana court has blocked a ballot collection law in the state, which tribes and Native vote advocates say restricts the right to vote for Native Americans. Yellowstone County District Court granted a preliminary injunction Tuesday, halting the Montana Ballot Interference Prevention Act. Tribes and Native vote advocates sued, saying the law would disenfranchise Native voters, especially those in rural areas, by ending the practice of ballot collection by vote organizers who transport ballots to tribal election offices. Native groups in British Columbia are vowing to fight on after a major legal defeat. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the Supreme Court of Canada has dismissed an Indigenous appeal of the Trans Mountain Pipeline approval.
The dismissal came, as usual, with no explanation from Canada's highest court, and it now effectively upholds a lower court decision approving the project as sound. It was also the last known legal option to overturn federal government approval of the project. Government leaders say they worked hard to accommodate concerns that Native communities had, but they welcome the court's decision, saying it's an important project for Canada. But several First Nations in BC say they will keep the fight against the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion going. Chief Leah George Wilson is with the Tsleil-Waututh First Nation.
It is a major setback for our reconciliation. It reduces consultation to a purely procedural requirement.
George Wilson says the ruling is not the end and she will consult with her community before deciding on the next step. Other opponents say they will continue to push back, some vowing that the expansion will never be completed. Government leaders say the project will provide nearly 4,900 jobs and will triple the amount of Alberta oil flowing to terminals on the West Coast and then by tanker to overseas markets. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The U.S. Supreme Court's refusal to reinstate water crossing permits for the Keystone XL pipeline puts construction on hold as environmental studies are conducted. An attorney says those studies should have been done years ago, Victoria Wicks reports.
A Montana federal court ruled in May that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' use of a fast-track permit was insufficient for oil and gas pipelines. Judge Brian Morris's decision applied to all new oil and gas pipelines in the country. Morris's injunction on Nationwide Permit 12 was affirmed by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals last month, and the Corps of Engineers then asked the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn that decision. Doug Hayes is a senior attorney with the Sierra Club. He says it's important to note that both higher courts have now affirmed Judge Morris's decision in the KXL case.
There's no doubt so far in either the Ninth Circuit opinion or the Supreme Court decision that that ruling was correct. So, you know, we're confident that the Ninth Circuit will find the same on appeal.
Hayes says the Corps now has to complete a thorough environmental study for the KXL before it can be built. I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The United National Indian Tribal Youth Organization, or UNITY, has gone viral this year in light of the ongoing pandemic. The gathering continues this week, as Christine Trudeau reports.
UNITY Executive Director Mary Kim Titlis says as Native youth continue to play a vital role in tribal communities combating COVID-19, it's important for them to take time to connect with peers at workshops, share talents, and build on self-care techniques to help navigate stress and anxiety management amid lockdowns and isolation.
What the virtual conference has to offer is a message of hope and empowerment, just connecting with each other. I think that's really important during this pandemic, is that we connect with each other and we inspire each other.
Registration is free at unityinc.org. Those with limited Wi-Fi access can still participate by telephone or receive content via thumb drive. I'm Christine Trudeau.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A white woman and man who defaced a Black Lives Matter mural in Martinez, California last weekend have been charged with committing a hate crime. Nicole Anderson and David Nelson were charged with three misdemeanor counts that include violation of civil rights, vandalism, and possession of tools to commit vandalism or graffiti. The mural was painted in front of the courthouse in Martinez on July 4th as a, quote, peaceful and powerful way to communicate the importance of Black lives in Contra Costa County and the country. That's according to District Attorney Diane Becton. Anderson painted over the mural in black paint while voicing her concern that, quote, this is not happening in my town. Nelson filmed Anderson defacing the mural with black paint and can be heard saying, quote, the narrative of police brutality, the narrative of oppression, the narrative of racism, it's all a lie. The mural was repainted after the incident. If convicted of the misdemeanor charges, the defendants could each face up to a year in county jail. Five states and Washington, D.C. are suing the government in order to protect public school funds coming from the CARES Act. Suzanne Potter has more on that story.
California, four other states, and Washington, D.C. are suing to stop the feds from siphoning off coronavirus aid meant for low-income schools and sending it to private and religious schools. Last week, Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos issued an interim final rule that requires CARE Act funds be equitably distributed to religious and private schools. However, California State Attorney General Javier Becerra says that would shortchange needy public school districts.
The Trump administration is creating a process that could unlawfully take tens of millions of dollars away from low-income public schools and divert it to private schools. Some of these private schools charging tuition as much as a private university.
Public school advocates complain that DeVos's rule would allocate funds to private schools according to their population and not their students' level of need. In late March, Congress appropriated $13 billion to help school districts clean their sites and implement distance learning, of which $1.5 billion is earmarked for California. Becerra says many private schools are able to double-dip by also claiming funds meant to pay furloughed workers' salaries.
Some of those schools have already been able to access the CARES Act Paycheck Protection Program, unlike California public schools that can't.
The attorneys general have vowed to seek a preliminary injunction to stop the interim final rule, which is currently open for public comment online at regulations.gov. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Even though United States COVID cases have topped the 3 million mark, the Trump administration is determined to reopen schools at their usual time this fall. President Trump threatened in a tweet this morning to cut off funding to schools that don't reopen. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos said yesterday, quote, under the president's strong leadership, our economy is roaring back. Our schools must do the same. National Education Association president and sixth grade teacher Lily Escalin Garcia said that, quote, no one should listen to Donald Trump or Betsy DeVos when it comes to what is best for students. The number of new daily COVID cases in the United States broke another record yesterday with over 60,000 new cases. In California, hospitalizations are up 50% from 2 weeks ago, while in Arizona, more than 90% of the state's ICU beds are filled. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 8th, 2020. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Yasmin Kobanoglu, Dan Raphael, and Jenka Soderberg. The producer is Nat Moon, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Lily Bolke, Antonia Gonzalez, Suzanne Potter, and Mary Sherman. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 8 it's KBOO Talk Radio. At 9, Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 10, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, it's Between the Covers, featuring interviews with authors from around the country and from nearby. Then at 11:30, we'll hear Words and Pictures. Tomorrow, we'll be running a tribute to one of Oregon's pioneering newspaper comic artists, Jan Elliott. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our listeners. If you would like to support our programming, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
There has been a massive outbreak of COVID-19 at the San Quentin Federal Prison in Northern California. The outbreak there has reached all parts of the prison, including death row, where many of the men are older prisoners with underlying health conditions. KBOO's Janka Soderberg spoke with James Scott, who is imprisoned on death row in San Quentin. Scott says the outbreak was spread through the prison not by a group of prisoners who had been transported from Chino Prison, which was widely reported, but instead by the guards themselves.
You have a prepaid call from
James Scott,
an inmate at the California State Prison, San Quentin, California.
Tell us, how did the COVID-19 get into San Quentin?
I don't know how it got into San Quentin, but I know how it got into East Block. It got into East Block by a few selfish gulag employees running up and down a chair coughing. And if they think I'm lying, just check the records. They feel like this. They got this place under surveillance now. They got cameras. They see them running around with a mask. Individuals found out that they was infecting their own by infecting us.
So the guards consciously knew that they had COVID-19 and still came to work.
Some of them knew. And now individuals that I know lives are in jeopardy, but yet they took it upon their own self to sentence us to death and kill us. Is that a violation of what they call that? No, it's official capacity, individual capacity. This could not be official capacity because I know that the warden did not sanction this. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then last Tuesday, one of the ones that was running around here texting people had came back after 13 days, 14 days, and admitted that she still had it. It's an untold amount of individuals in here who are sick, coughing. They can't isolate them because there's just too many cases. People are not telling the truth. They just can't blame it on the Chino. It goes beyond Chino now. That individual selfish employees in their quest to give us a quick death sentence not only affected us, but affected their co-workers. That's how bright they are.
Yeah, because
I'm starting to sweat.
What I heard about the infection. San Quentin was that there were 200 prisoners that got transferred from Chino where there was an outbreak, and that those prisoners brought the COVID, but you're saying it was guards and it was separate from that.
Look. They brought the COVID, true enough, to a different block. They knew that they were coming. Unfortunately, certain officers got infected. Some officers knew they had it, and those that didn't, that know they got it, they didn't come up here, but those that knew they had it, they came up in here with the intention of doing what is happening right now. It's over probably 100, maybe 200 individual COVID cases right now on my side. And a lot of these are older men. They got diabetes. They have high blood pressure. They got, all kind of different ailments. men have been dropping left and right around here. I'm just fortunate enough I have not got it.
Any idea how many people have died?
I really can't tell you. I don't know the number, but I know as it stands right now, it's 5 tiers, and it's 27 in the front, 27 in the back. That's 54 times that, and probably maybe, it's an untold number, and they're in between each cell.
How are they isolating people that have it or trying to keep?
They can't. You stay in the cell. You stay in the cell. The only thing that's taking place right now is you're doing a oxygen check. Stick your little finger in this little thing, and it measures how much oxygen you're taking in. And if you got like 96, you got between 95 and 100, you're good. The threshold on the street is 95 under. You need oxygen, but in here is 92. They'll give you oxygen. By that time, you're laying on the floor, either dead or almost dead, and they're taking you to the outside hospital to incubate you. That's the medical treatment.
As somebody who's inside right now, how do you think that California can turn this around at this point? Is it going to be massive releases of people and then isolating at home? How can they actually make this right?
I don't know. I can't, for me to be lost for words, you know, that's unheard of. I don't know because, see, this is what you have that mass infection on the street, you have it in here now. And see, all I can see right now, unfortunately for us, is that they. I hate to say it, you know, the sentence of death is not good. You get no medical treatment. You get no leeway. You get no nothing. It doesn't matter if you have not been engaged in any kind of altercations or have never had a 115 or whatever. Right now, all they see is a person with a death sentence. And the only, like I said, the only measure for us is the cell. And it's only two ways you're going to get. Either you're going to recover or you're going to die. That's it. Now, as far as the youngsters out there that's on the main lines, they need to release them if they're definitely ill. At least have that much compassion and let them be surrounded by some people that love them instead of stuck in these boxes with no ventilation and, you know, this stuff just floating all over. Oh, man, I got a headache. And it's not from COVID. Sad. It's just absolute sad. That's all I can say.
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
And the way they do it now to soften it up, you know, they put the person's case on, but they're not saying that the individual's been locked up 36 years or 40 years or what have you, had no outside action for that long or any problems in here. But yet they sentenced to death with COVID. I hope I survive. That's all I can say.
You can't get visitors. You can't have anybody, even like human contact. You guys are stuck in your cells.
If I didn't read all those books that I've read over the years, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I'd probably be cooking for Cocoa Puffs. That's the only thing keeping me is that I have developed a mindset to not let what's really taking place bother me. I've been doing my Qigong, all that stuff, just to keep myself from even really wrapping my mind around it and thanking Yahweh, the Great One, you know, the Heavenly Mother, whatever source it is, that I have not contracted it. It's not by luck. It's not by luck. Because I'm looking at individuals that I know have this stuff taken. They're here today and gone tomorrow. So full of life. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And all society can think about all their death row prisoners don't have no passion for them and none of that. But if you've been locked up 30-something years, We've been here since we was 21, 22, 20. 57, 58, 59. Come on. We had nothing to do with what took place in the world.
And no power to do anything about it. I mean, you're stuck in there. You're like fish in a fish tank. There's nowhere to go.
Exactly. Exactly what it is. Exactly. You hit the nail on the head when you said that. I mean, exactly what this is. This, like I said, this recycled air. They could bust some windows out just to have some air flow through here.
Are they doing anything like that? I mean, is the warden taking any steps for increased air circulation, for keeping people separated?
No. Only way we separated with that, you know, it's been no program, no yard and so on, but this air is still recycled. But the front of the cell is opened up. You know, like I said, it's just too many. It's too many young men and men in here who have tested positive, who have went through. I mean, a lot of them went through the trial and error for the last 3 weeks, on the brink of death. Just recently snapped out of it. I was talking to one of my little partners, and he, you know, one minute he's there, and the next minute he's gone. So 3 days later, he says, "Man, what you talking about?" I said, "That was 3 days ago." He just not getting over it. And I ain't talking about just black. When I say brothers, I'm talking about all colors. I'm talking about nationality, universal. You know, you know, some didn't get it, some didn't. Some, I don't know what it is. I think it might be because of the booster shots that we took, those vaccinations that took back in the 60s that's probably helping the 60 babies out. But it is in here, and it's the angel of death. Trying to collect, not out, only out there, but in here too. That's why I can't watch the news. I can't listen to the news. I'm listening to a Christian rock station called K-Love now. That is my peace. That is the only thing I can have. I don't wish this on nobody. I don't wish this on no enemies. I don't wish this on guards. I don't wish this on nobody. Not even the commander-in-chief.
If people are listening on the outside, is there something they can do, like call the warden or the California Department of Corrections to demand action to...
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
Jenka, I can say this to you. The warden had nothing to really do with this. It was out of his hands. I'm not backing CDC or nothing like this, but the way this stuff is right now, is the fact that it's out of control. CDC didn't, I'm talking about the doctors out there, they didn't even know what it was. They still don't know what it was, what it is, or how to cure it, and so forth and so on. This right here is devastating. This right here is a population, it's almost like a population control virus. That's how I'm looking at it. That's how I'm looking at it. And there's nothing really anyone can do except social distancing, wearing your mask, got a mask, and so on and so forth. But far as us in here, we don't have the cleaning products. They give us a little piece of soap that's not going to disinfect the germs in your socks.
Do you have masks?
Yeah, we got. They provide us with two little masks, little cloth masks. All you can do is just work out. Like I say, work out, read, and keep your mind straight. But as far as what's going on out there, the people that help us out there, they help us in here. It's the same exact thing, but on a microcosmic level. On a microcosmic. The only thing I can say is you got people locked up. The reason why you haven't heard from me, because they wasn't letting mail go out. But individuals need to write to those that are incarcerated. We know somebody that's incarcerated. Show them some love. I know it's difficult to write, but a hello, or go on jpay.com, whatever it is, and write a letter, an email letter or something. It's to brighten someone's day, lift them up. That's all really anyone can do, because We don't know what we're dealing with. Society don't know what they're dealing with. The doctors don't know what they're dealing with. Their remedy is incubator and so on and so forth. I think I'm blessed by the grace of Yahweh that, you remember, Jake, when they took me out of here and I had to go to the outside hospital and put Cipro. I think that's saving me right now. In fact, that's in my blood. That's the only thing. But you want to show some support, even if it's only mental. Write a letter. You don't have to be 50 pages. Just hello. Think about it. Love you. How can I help you? Ask those that are in crisis, how can I help you? That's all I can say. This place, you know, anything is subject to change. They go on absolute lockdown. Surprise, yesterday was like 6 alarms up in here. Mm. It's only been 1 today. That's a good sign.
Four.
People dying.
Oh, my gosh. James Scott talking from Death Row in San Quentin.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station.
Well, good evening. You are listening to News from the Boo here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Jenny Yokoyama, your host for tonight, and I'm also one of your interim station co-managers. Here on News from the Boo, we talk about all things KBOO, inside, outside, around, and in between. This is a show for programmers, it's a show for volunteers, it's a show for our listeners, anybody that is part of the KBOO community. So thanks for tuning in. I'm going to jump right into things.